the revenue management, a lot of the bigger players are putting out a very cheap rate on their website. We actually have a competitor, one of our markets, that did it. And so I called and talked, and we're acting like the customer to figure it out.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Students of Storage podcast. My name is Michael Brevda. I'm joined with my co-host, Tully Hanan. Very special guest, Jonas Duckett, joining us today. How are you, Jonas?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for making the time. We really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. I love to talk storage.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a pretty action-packed agenda today just to talk about some topics that you do really well as a business owner, but want to set the tone for the listeners. Can you just give us a quick overview, elevator pitch on you, your business, how you got into storage, all that fun stuff?
Sure. So I got into storage about 5 years ago. Had one, started with just a single location in my hometown. Talked to an owner multiple times. Finally, he agreed to sell it. And then it just took off from there. My motivation at the time, my son had just got diagnosed with autism, and I was trying to figure out a way to have what they call mailbox money, right? Because that's, autism is expensive. So it just snowballed, took off, and anytime I was out of town or in my hometown driving around, I would just start talk to owners, stay in contact with them, and it just grew to today we have 40 locations. I was at first on Easy Storage Solutions. It's an okay software if you have just a couple locations, but I was constantly looking for a different software that checked several boxes. One was affordability. Two was feeling like I was a part of a team, like whoever I wanted to do business with, I wanted it to feel like it was a team thing, not just an automated AI call center type of situation. I constantly searched, demoed, I think, every software there was, finally landed with Cubby, and probably one of the best decisions I've ever made for many of things that we'll talk about here today. But that's basically the gist in a nutshell. I could talk about that all day, but that's kind of what got me into storage up until this point.
Yeah, thanks for the kind words. Certainly interesting to call Cubby one of the best decisions you've ever made, but I appreciate the thought there. What's your business like? Brand name, how many units are you up to? Where's the portfolio concentrated?
Sure. We're Historic Quick Storage. We were, as I was growing, I was buying storage businesses that were already named. I didn't really know how to mitigate that. So I just kept the name normally, or I would call it like city name at state, like Cape Girardeau Storage, Cape Girardeau, Missouri Storage. And that was good for several reasons, but within the last 6 months or so, I rebranded it to all Historic Quick Storage. Our customers now know us by that. Our website's branded by that. That's been a really hard thing to do with going online and making sure all your listings are changed. And there's just a lot more that people don't see. And I would recommend to anyone that has to do that, hire someone, pay them. And it's one of those things that you really can't do on your own. I learned that the hard way. But Exponential Growth team helped me with that. They now handle all my SEO, but we've got about 4,000 units, give or take, somewhere in that ballpark. And we're constantly growing. We have slowed down with our growth. This year, I just wanted to focus on growing occupancy, growing revenue, because a lot of these facilities that I purchased were huge value add. Mom and pops that wouldn't answer the phone, that didn't care about if they rented a unit or not. These were ones that weren't found online. So I might buy a 300-unit facility and only 30 or 50 units might be rented. And are those 30 or 50 units, 10 of them were paying. So I started with some of these facilities, 5% occupancy. So I really focused this year with Exponential Growth to, hey, let's get more rentals. Let's do better at operating these facilities. And then once we hit this threshold that we're almost there, then I'll go into the next gear and go into growth mode again. But that's the gist for now.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And that's something that we run into all the time with speaking with forward-thinking, growth-oriented operators like yourself is, when do we rebrand the facilities under one umbrella? How do we do it? That sort of thing. Can you talk in a little more detail about, in a vacuum, when you would recommend someone to consider uniting all their stores under one unified brand, and like the do's and don'ts and considerations there? Like, is it 5 locations? Is it 15 locations? Is it 20 and so on?
I think you do it as you go. So if I had it to do over again, when I had my first location, I would have thought long and hard, what do I want my business to be called? If I know I'm going to grow this, let's start and do it right. Most people don't do that. Most people don't know they're going to end up in Love Storage and want to keep buying. But so I would say, if you have more than two facilities and you're listening, do it now. If you have 10 or more, what I learned, a little free nugget here of information, is on your Google My Business, if you change it from your old name to a new name, you're going to drop. Just like if you change it to something you can shoot to the sky. You need to really focus on keeping, if you're ranking well. If you're not ranking well, change to whatever you want. Doesn't matter. You're not doing a good job anyways. But if you are ranking well, make sure to just keep it what it's named and then just add Buy Store It Quick. Go ahead and change your website. Do the same thing. Whatever you do on your Google My Business, do the same thing on the website, but it's just buy your brand. Hilton does it. Marriott does it. It's nothing new. So That's one thing I would highly recommend. Don't just go in there and change it like I did on a couple of them and go from number one spot to now you're not even in the map pack. And the map pack is where you're going to get all of your business. So not all, but about 55%, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a natural segue as we're talking about SEO and Google ranking and driving more eyeballs and ultimately rentals to your website. You all do a really nice job, not only at generating leads and getting eyeballs to the website, which is talked about a lot in the storage space, SEO, PPC, how do we just drive traffic to our website? But a lot of the things that I talk about with operators is the back half of the swing. Once someone's on the website, how do we turn that person into a paying customer? How do we make sure that we're not just losing all of these leads that we're paying good money for and time and effort for? Can you talk to us a little bit about your general approach to the website and to making sure that you're converting leads? Because out of 300 plus Cubby customers, you're in the upper echelon of lead conversion. So kudos to you. Share some of the sauce with the audience, if you don't mind.
What I did is I do all my own website editing with the help of Exponential Growth. But what I do is I try to think, and it's very hard to do because my mind's so storage motivated, is get on your website and think that you are a customer. I'm a customer. I'm in a renting unit. Can I do this quickly? Anything I buy online, I want to do it fast. I'm a little price conscious, but I might not go check 5 other websites. I'm in a hurry. I want to buy it. I want it to tell me when I'm going to get it. That's it. That's what I want to know. So I just went and studied the REITs. What do they do? And what I found is I didn't even like theirs. I thought they had hit 80% of it. Like, it was awesome. And I changed a lot of my stuff to match theirs. So, but what I found was, I got my daughter and my wife, and I'm like, hey, rent. Act like you're renting a unit, tell me what you see. And most of the time we weren't even seeing the same things, but what they were seeing was like, oh man, I didn't even think about that. A lot of the REITs and mom and pops, absolutely, they're not doing it. Explain how to do it. So like on my website, I easily explain, or at the very top, it'll above the fold, it'll have the name, couple, maybe a drone video. If you're like one of the location pages, that's, most people, the main web page means nothing. No one should be pointing to the main web page. Facilities, it might be a little bit better, but the main web page really doesn't have any ranking.
The drone videos are really sick though, and I do recommend it to a lot of groups as well. Just something different on the website.
Yeah. So, have something that's eye-catching, drone video, good pictures. Have it to where it's easy to call you if they want. A lot of people do want to call. They don't want to rent online, but a vast majority do want to just rent online and be done with it. So easily explain there, you'll see the select a unit with the picture, make a payment with a picture, receive gate codes with a picture. So they don't even really have to read it necessarily. They can just look and they're like, oh, I do this and I can immediately move in the storage unit because I have a U-Haul and I forgot to do it and it's past 5 o'clock and now I'm screwed. So you have to have that. And then the availability to rent online, you have to have that. So I think that's one of the bigger things that I did was just make it simple. to where they don't have to call in to the office. Let them know the easy, simple steps. I can do this all myself. And then you'll see your conversions go up. You just will. And a lot of the big players too will put miles and miles of data on there. And I know it helps with SEO for the organic, but it doesn't do anything for your map pack. So I don't do that. I think it makes it convoluted. It's too hard to read through. It's too busy. I just want mine to be simple. And I want my frequently asked questions not to be geared toward the Google algorithm. I want it to be actual questions that, oh, if I'm renting a unit, what do I want to know? And you'll see your conversions go up. You'll see people not having to call into the office as much. Yeah, that long way of answering your question.
No, that's super helpful. And then for folks that do slip through the cracks and don't complete the process on their own, how are you? I know you have a really lean team. How are you making sure that you're following up on new leads quickly, whether it be over the phone or abandoned carts or contact us forms or wait lists or anything like that? Like, how are you making sure that you're following up with the folks that do need that personal touch?
So I'd be lying to say that it's probably because I'm the owner and I am very hands-on. It would work for someone else as long as that person was very hands-on. But Cubby has a great way of sending me a text message if there's a lead. So I can read it at 7 o'clock at night or 3 o'clock in the morning. So if we get a lead, I just wait. I basically set a timer on my phone. 10 minutes from now, I'm going to check. 10 minutes, if that lead hasn't converted, which I would automatically know because Cubby's going to text me and tell me a new unit's been rented. If that didn't happen, I'm texting. Or maybe I'm at the office and I'm like, hey, we got to call this person. Check in. What's going on? What I've noticed, if you can do that within about the first 30 minutes, you're going to convert. If you wait to the next day, you may still convert, but it's not as likely. Most of the time, it was an error that happened. Not an error or anything on Cubby's side. It was, oh, I went to rent the unit, but I forgot I didn't have my wallet, or I forgot this or forgot that. So what we'll do is we'll go ahead, hey, that's no problem. Let's go ahead and rent your unit, though. Let's go ahead and get your unit rented. Call us back today, tomorrow, whatever. Make that payment. No big deal. So, and we just make a note. Hey, call them tomorrow. Or in Cubby now, you can do tasks. So that's immediately what we do. Set a task. Call them back tomorrow at 9 a.m. if they haven't made a payment. I don't know what my percentage is. Richard was telling me earlier about all that. We really don't have a good ring. I don't know how to look at that yet. But yeah, what you'll find is you'll convert a lot of those leads if you're just proactive about it. There's really no secret. It's just being on top of it.
Shout out Richard for getting us these awesome stats, but I can tell you exactly what your lead conversion rate is. And this is lead conversion, something that gets, I think, misconstrued a lot of times, to where what does lead conversion mean and what does the percentage actually mean? For some, it's just converting like a website visitor into a lead or someone who left their info. But when it comes to Cubby, and the truest form of lead conversion is, I had 100 interested renters, potential renters, how many of them turned into paying customers? So for you all at Store It Quick, your lead conversion ratio is 71%. So that means 7 out of 10 folks who were interested in a unit through whatever channel are converting into a paying customer. That's huge. To some degree, folks say that you can only capture existing demand versus create new demand. So how can we get that conversion number as high as possible? I think that that is something that's really important. And to your point, having the processes in place, even if it's just Jonas Duckett being Superman, but for folks with more corporate outfits, how are you judging your site managers or your call center agents or whomever on lead follow-up time and lead conversion rate? Like, you can't improve what's not measured, and you can't improve what there's not a process for. So putting those processes in place is something that's definitely beneficial and candidly separates the operators I see doing really well versus those who are like, hey, occupancy is lagging. It's like, well, are you answering the phone? Are you following up on online leads? Like, how quickly are you following up?
I know some operators that if someone's on the website, they'll see maybe there's a discount. But if a customer is just clicking the Google My Business and calling and they're not even going on the website, they won't really sell the discount. In my opinion, you're not going to catch me, because people are always minded. I mean, think of anything online. What do you want? You want what you want, and you want a deal on it, and you want it fast. I mean, that's how Amazon's the business that it is today. Those three simple things. So why not, if someone's calling in, pitch them on what it costs today? Hey, how much is a 10 by 20? I mean, everyone gets that call 10 times a day. How much is a 10 by 20? Well, instead of saying that's $100 a month, that's it. Say, well, actually, this month we've got a heck of a special. 2 months, you're going to get this unit for $25. It's 75% discount. Don't mention the 100. That is not in your vocabulary. You're a salesman. You tell them what it's going to cost you for those 2 months. We're doing this for you. It's all about you. You've got to train your partners that, hey, kind of reprogram how you think. You need to sell them. And we've got to be very good salesmen. Otherwise, they're just going to call someone else. And if you feel that they're about to get off the phone, say, hey, most of them are getting off phone because they're price shop. No matter what they tell you, they're about to call someone else. You say, hey, I'm just letting you know too, I price shop this every day with our amazing Cubby software. It tells me what all my competitors are every single day. And that is something that I check every single day. And I don't try to always be the cheapest, but I do want to be close. I don't want to be just way out there. I can get them there once they move in, right? Over a period of time through rent increases. So if they call in and they're trying to get off the phone, I'm going to say, hey, by the way, before you get off here, I've already checked all my competitors. We're right in line with their pricing. If you go ahead and rent it now, I'm going to give you an extra $10 off this month. But if you want to still call a competitor, no problem. Call them. We do have a price match guarantee. So anything that you find out there, as long as you tell us where it's from and we can verify it, we're going to match their price. And I guarantee you our facility's 10 times nicer because I've been to every single one of them. You know, make sure that they have a gate. Make sure that they have a camera. Make sure they have everything. And we're apples for apples, right? And I'll get them every time.
No, I think you just dropped like 5 very valuable nuggets in about a 3-sentence span there that, again, I don't think folks are even thinking about. At the end of the day, storage is a commodity, but anything you can do to make it not that thing, I think is very helpful, right? So just using what you know about the market to help steer folks in your direction. And again, if you know the overall cost of acquiring a customer for your business, and you tack an extra $10 on in that one instance, but you know that over the course of their tenancy, they're going to spend $800-$900 or more with you. What's an extra $10, right? It's better to get that rental in the door than lose it to someone else over minuscule amounts. It's like negotiating almost.
Our people that rent from us are at least, I mean, our average I would think is somewhere around 18 months. I looked at it not that long ago, but what amazes me is there's some people that have been here 5 years before I bought it. Some of our customers have been in the unit 10 years. So, and not every customer is like that, right? But if that is that one customer that's going to do it, what is giving them 2 months free? I mean, it really means nothing in the long haul. And then once you get your occupancy there, you can drop that back down, be more selective. But if you're trying to fill up, who cares about a month or two? Give them whatever they want. I'd pay them to move in if it wasn't so red flaggish.
Oh, man, I love it. Any other nuggets or thoughts on the lead conversion side? Because next, I want to jump over to another thing you do really well, which is collections and keeping delinquency super low among your existing tenant base.
Yeah, no, I think I'm good with the leads.
You have a very low accounts receivable balance. Not to put your business on blast to anybody, I won't give any numbers or anything, but you don't have a lot of delinquent tenants. Talk to us about how you approach that side of things.
So I think one is because, Michelle, we're very people friendly. We're not trying to be this robot, right? If they call in, we talk to them. She knows what's going on in their life. They know her. So I think when you have a relationship with people, you're much better for them to pay you. If they hate your guts, they're just whatever. They'll pay you late. They'll forget about you. They get mad, whatever. So I think that's first step. Second step is, you need to be reminding people. Cubby's got a great, probably one of the best in class of past due notice, if their auto pay failed notice, custom templates that I can send out very easily. I can make whatever template I want for whatever facility I want. And I can easily amend that within minutes to my entire portfolio. So it just give you everything. At 5 days late, they get a late fee notice. At 15 days late, they get a lockout fee notice that's custom and tailored. And then at 22 days late, they get the lien feet. That's through text message and SMS. So in the 22-day, it's actually that the standard state lien letter through email. But in the text message, it's much different. It's saying, hey, we don't know what's going on in your life. Call us and let us know. We'll work with you. There's got to be a reason that you haven't paid us yet. So call us. Let's talk about it. We'll get a call normally. It's normally a story, all right? Whether they're lying to you or not, doesn't matter. We'll say, okay, we'll work with you. You have 45 days from the time that we sent it. You got 45 days to figure this out. At the end of that 45 days, I want this unit paid, but I'll work with you through that time. Can you not pay $10 a week? Could you pay $20 a week? Well, let's find a balance here. And then what I'll do is I'll start pausing late fees and lien fees. If I can look at that customer and they're not doing this every single month and they didn't fall in a hard time, which a lot of them do, I'll work with them. And when you say, hey, I'm gonna pause these late fees, lien fees. I know you're struggling. Let's just get this coming. As long as you're paying every week, I'm not going to make you pay any extra at the end of this. Let's just get this caught up. Customer retention is going to make you more money than a couple late fees and lien fees. So that's probably the biggest thing of why. But then we follow up. I mean, after the 22 days, if we haven't heard from that customer after we've sent that message, then we're going to send them another one that's a little more harsh. It's like, all right, we gave you a chance. We didn't hear from you. We're still here to talk to you. We're just going through our standard practice now. We're going to auction your unit off at this date and whatever. A lot of times people will still end up coming back to us and like, hey, I know I've seen your message, but I had all this stuff going on. I'm sorry. That's okay. No big deal. Same message I'll come across. We'll waive your late fees, waive your lien fees, just pays. And what my thing is, all right, at 45 days, I'm going to go through the normal practice. If they've paid me $50, whatever it is, say they have a 200 balance. If they reach it to where it's 50% of what they owed me, I'll say, all right, I'm gonna pause that. We're going to pause your auction. You're trying here. Just keep making your payments. Well, a lot of what you'll see is those people actually just continue to pay. Well, if they don't, once it hits that next month, they're still on the past due list, I'll start it over. There is customers that know the cycle, whatever, but I'm still getting paid. Their balance isn't increasing, it's decreasing, and I still have that customer. I'd rather have that than selling their unit for $20, then paying Google to re-advertise it or whatever I have to do, send my guys to clean it, sweep it out, put a new lock on it, whatever it is, you're better off just to work with them, in my opinion. And then every case is different too. If you're 100% occupied and you got this thing you're dealing with all the time, I get it. All right, come on. You got to go. Give me a new customer that's going to pay it. I'm not going to have to call every month. But that is why I'm low, is because I work more than a big REIT or a big operator that doesn't want to deal with it. They just have a clear-cut system. If they're not paid after 45, they're gone. And a customer's not going to give you any money if they know that. They're just going to say, okay, sell it. You know, you just, in my opinion, you lost. Because that customer may have generally been in a hard time. Maybe it's tax time. They're broke right now, and they in 3 months, they're going to be rich. I think that's probably the biggest reason why. That and Cubby sending out the automated templates to where we don't sound so robotic. You know, I change them every month. I'll tweak it. So if the same customer gets it, it doesn't seem the same way. But big part of that is that.
Yeah. So I think some folks do this better than others on the first half, which is just using the software and tech available to you to automate as much as possible and make sure they're actually trying to collect. But I think what you just illuminated really well is the back half of like, all right, where can we use the human touch? I think it's almost similar to the existing tenant rate increase side, which we can talk about if we've got, I don't know, Richard, 5 more minutes after this section here. But how much is it going to cost me to backfill this unit if I can't retain this customer, right? So if we can use the human side and get them paying us something, to your point, and not have to go through the logistics and legalities of actually auctioning the unit, that's probably a win. Again, you didn't mention this, but if somebody's not being responsive or is being rude, like, you're going to go through your normal process and get them the heck out of there. But to your point, tough times all around for folks. Let's be amenable and let's be human when we can. So that's great.
You'll also get a lot of good Google reviews if you play it right.
Yeah, I can imagine. Tully, not to put you on the spot, anything you want to like chime in and ask Jonas?
No, I mean, I think there's so much that Cubby can effectively help you do or automate. But I think the personalization and being human aspect, Jonas, really resonated with me. Whether that's allowing somebody to go through the rental process and then say, hey, you know what, we'll collect the rent a little bit later. Not everybody would necessarily be amenable to that. But I think that whether when you look at it from a brand perspective, that's pretty massive. So yeah, great insight here. No questions on my end. Just keep up the good work.
Appreciate it.
I know we're approaching time, but Jonas, to give you an open-ended question, we didn't talk about it a ton, but any general nuggets on the revenue management side of things or anything else that you think would be valuable for someone listening to know in terms of how you approach your business?
The revenue management, a lot of the bigger players are putting out a very cheap rate on their website. We actually have a competitor, one of our markets, that did it. And so I called and talked and was acting like a customer to figure it out. So there's some that do weekly. They'll advertise a weekly price, not a monthly price, a weekly price, which gains you an extra month every year. There are some that will advertise that they're 10% of what the actual market rent rate is. But what they don't say is within 2 months or 3 months, they're going to jack your rent way up. If you go look at those people that are doing that, go to their Google reviews, see what's happening, see how they're dropping in the rankings. I don't think they'll do this for a very long term, but maybe they will. If they do, great. I advertise against them. If you go to my website, you're going to see a price match guarantee. You're going to see a rate lock guarantee for a year. What I advertise is the discount, and it's very clear. You're going to get for 2 months, whatever the discount is, 75%, 90%, maybe free. Whatever special I'm running in that market, you're going to know that it's only for 2 months. At the end of that 2 months, it's going to go to normal price. If I'm a storage customer and I see a competitor, or if I'm looking at apples for apples, one saying, hey, it's only 10 bucks a month. This guy's saying, hey, it's only going to be 10 bucks a month for 2 months, and then it's going to normal price. I'm going to think, well, what's going on with this other one? Like, why is that so cheap, right? That's too cheap. What'll happen is that customer's going to call then, question it, what's going on? And you tell them, we train our staff. Hey, tell them what they're doing. Let them know, here's what's coming. So I think that's the biggest play is you let them know, hey, this is going to be our price and this is the max you'll pay for a year. The competitors are going to, you'll have 100% increase probably within 6 months, depending on what their algorithm at that time is telling them to do. So that's my take. And at a year, once I get to that year point with them, then they will get a rate increase. It's not just January 1. It's whenever they hit a year, they'll get a rate increase. And then I might go to 12.99. So they get one at the first year. And then depending on occupancy, depending on a lot of other metrics, at 9 months, they might get another one. But I didn't raise their rate for a year and I held what I told. That's kind of my thing. But a lot of times I'd try to do what everyone else didn't do, just go against them. But
yeah, that's what I recommend to folks when they're like, how do I compete with the REITs? We're just getting swarmed. It's like, you can do the same effective move-in rate, but transparency always wins and transparency is always helpful. You don't want to pull the bait and switch on someone. Like, to your point, $10 on a 10 by 10 with no notion that it's some sort of introductory rate. And then you jack them to $200. I was just reading an article this morning where number one, we could talk ethics all day. It seems very bait and switchy if it's not an intro offer. But number two, it's going to get you bad reviews, like you said. And then number three, for the broader industry as a whole, it's going to make more pissed off customers that bring more attention and eyeballs and legislators and all the things that
regulation.
Yeah, all the things that we don't want. So there's a way to achieve the same economic and revenue result while being transparent about it, I think. And you're doing a great job of that. You mentioned your 12.99 plan and some of the ECRI stuff. What are some of the factors that you're looking at and prioritizing above others when it comes to how much of a raise are you going to give someone, or if you might not give someone a raise at 12 months? Talk to me about what factors you're looking at.
There's several things there. One is, what's occupancy? And not occupancy of the facility. What is occupancy of the particular facility's unit type? What is the occupancy of a 5 by 10 there? Is it 90%? Well, if it's 90%, I'm going to bump it probably 10%. I'm going to extend out a customer rent increase. I'm not ever going to go above 10%. Sign it. That would tick me off, right? 10% percent's high. But 10% still of a unit that's only $50 a month, it's only $5. So it's not a whole lot of money, but it is when you have 4,000 units. So that's my key. If I'm over 80%, that's my strategy. If I'm below 80%, probably not going to send them one. But it's not that I'm not going to send them one for another 9 months. It's they're not giving one this month, right? Instead of, I might bump it to, instead of hitting them at 9 months, I might hit them at 12 months. Time of year, not all my customers aren't going to hit at one time. So the time of year that they're doing it, maybe I'm going to wait and not do it when it's good weather outside. I might wait till there's a foot of snow on the ground or it's 105. I'm going to think about all those factors. One thing I did forget to mention too, and I think it's a very important point, is if you're a customer on that, when we were talking about the REITs and how they're doing pricing, if you're a customer and you're looking at that and, you know, a REIT is at $10 and you're showing that it's 90, but you have a discount of 75, what I try to do is hit that REIT price. So if they're showing $20 for a 10 by 20, I'm also going to show my discount for the first 2 months to be $20. Because 90% of customers only think they're going to use storage for 2 months. So don't just do your discount for 1 month. Do it for both months. Because in their eyes, that's all they're going to need it for anyways. So that was a point that I wanted to make and I forgot to circle back to. But as far as the doing the rate increases, it's not a huge thing for me. It's just kind of simple supply, demand, where am I at? And I never go above 10%. But I'm not going to do an increase for 3% either, because they're still going to get mad. If they're a customer that's going to get mad, some of them don't care. The higher you have on auto pay, the better chance you are at keeping, you know, you'll have less move out. So that's another thing, is really focus on your auto pay. But it's not a really big science to me. It's just business.
Do you ever look at things like how far someone lives from the facility, or like gate access logs to see how often they're going or not? Or is that too 201 level?
I don't. I mean, I know that you guys have been working on showing so much information on that page. I think that to me, it's more of just, what is my occupancy? I know that all that stuff does matter, and you might be able to hit them for more. Like if this is someone that's using it 4 times a month, hey, it might be a business, or it might be that they're sleeping there, or you don't know, right?
Right.
But you can definitely hit them for more. So I do see that side, but I just haven't got to that point yet to where I'm really diving in on all of those deep metrics. I just want my 10%. I'm happy.
Yeah. And to your point, I like to geek out on the extra stuff, but the main stuff is occupancy, move in, move out velocity of a particular unit type. And then, yeah, just your normal rules of how long they've been with you. So that's all really good stuff. Last final question for me. And then if Tully's got anything, that's fine. What's on the agenda for the rest of the year? Is it continued focus on operations? Are you going to reopen the acquisitions pipeline? Like, where's your head focused in the next few months?
Well, January 1, I came into the year. I do what everyone does. I get all pumped up for the new year. All right, what's my goals? And my goal was operations. At the time, I was sitting at 76%, which wasn't bad to me because, like I told you earlier, a lot of these big facilities that I bought in the last 5 years were big 300-400 unit facilities that were 5%, 10% full. So I've came a long way. But my goal was, hey, when I hit 85%, that's my goal. I want to hit 85% by the end of the year. If I do that, then I'm going to go into acquisition mode. Well, I hit 85% last week. So I'm like, now I'm like, well, do I just continue to churn and then focus? So I'm just in between. Yeah. I am working 2 deals right now. 2 deals to me is not that massive to be working. So I think I'm going to slowly start putting the feelers out again, which I already am always doing, but maybe looking at newer deals, maybe reaching out more to owners. Cause I do think that we're going to see interest rates go down a little bit this year, probably a lot more next year. Who knows? Crystal ball, right? But so yes, I'm going to get back in the acquisition mode, but this year I'm still, man, now it's like, all right, let me get to 90. You know, if I can get to 90, which I think I probably am. I mean, in the last 2 months, I've rented almost 250 units each month with gaining 120 each month net. So, yeah, I'm pumped. And I don't want listeners to think I'm biased because you guys are hosting the podcast, but I promise you, make the switch. It's not as hard as you think. Make the switch. If I have any recommendations when you do make the switch, start gaining that auto pay information a couple months in advance as best as you can. That's the only thing that was just a little hard. It wasn't struggle. It's just the manual stuff. And start doing that and your life will be way easier.
Appreciate the veiled pitch. I think you gave a lot of like non-cubby oriented advice, which is always helpful for our listeners. So thank you for sharing that. And thanks for taking the time. I mean, I've known you a little over 2 years now, almost something like that. And you've come a long way from juggling 35 different logins and tabs and all that stuff to really like doing what you want to do from a website perspective, from a business perspective. So really just great to see you thriving, and thanks for making the time. It's always great catching up.
Yeah, great catching up with you guys. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jonas.
Thank you for listening to Students of Storage. Links to any of the resources we chatted about in the episode can be found in the show notes. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe just so that you don't miss out on any future episodes. Hope to see you back here soon.